friends. Welcome to Interviews, Voices of Our Herbal Elders. This is my opportunity to talk to some of my dearest friends, people who have not only influenced my herbal work, but also have had a major influence on the revitalization of American herbalism. Most of us began our herbal work around the same time, in the early 1970s and 80s, when herbalism was still mostly underground, a place where plants actually thrived quite well. I love hearing people tell their herbal stories of how they began their herbal work, who and what inspired them, their favorite plant and healing stories, and I felt that others would be interested in hearing them as well. In fact, I felt it was important to capture these stories before this generation of elders passed on, as we're all destined to do. Brooke, I've heard you refer to yourself as a Gaian citizen and a sacred ecologist. I think I know what you mean by that, but I'd really love to hear you share about that, what those words mean to you.
Well, as far as being a good Gaian citizen, I like to refer to this beautiful earth as Lady Gaia. I believe she's moving into a whole new level of possibility these days, and that's a wonderful way to address her. Yeah. And actually, I really came to work for the earth. Even more than just human beings. I work with human beings because we seem to be a really key player in this game that's going on right now. And also one of the wonderful things is I've been able to travel a lot lately, and I have been able to circle the globe and see a lot of the earth and the earth's people. So that's another way I think of myself as a Gaian citizen. And as far as Earthkeeper, again, I came to work for the earth and for all our relations as much as human beings. You know, White Buffalo Woman talks to us about valuing, everybody in the circle of life, everything and everyone, as much as we value ourselves. And I certainly stand in that place. So I'm really concerned about the family of life, you know, and about our human family, because as you know, we are now in the sixth great extinction on this planet.
Yeah.
And primarily because of we humans, we have lost over 50%, destroyed, I might say, over 50% of our Earth family, 50% of our Earth family, of the species, the beings who are our family here on Earth, we have actually destroyed. And so I'm very, very concerned about all of our relations and about our human ability to stay here. Because, you know, if I were a good mother and one of my children had killed half of the family, I would have to say, you need to go.
Yeah.
And so, you know, being an earth keeper, all of those things are on my mind and certainly on my heart. And I have very deep sadness about what we've done to this incredibly, incredibly beautiful earth that we were given. So I'd like to keep this earth beautiful. I would like to see a regenerative sustainability happening. And that really has to come from us as a human family. So I'm definitely an earth keeper from my heart. I fell in love with the earth when I was a child. You know, I've been around crazy human beings for a lot of my life, or most of my life. So what I turn to, I think, as many people who get into the plant world, suddenly realize that there are these other amazing beings other than human beings around. And so turning to the land, turning to the beauty of the land and the animals was the way I began my life.
Yeah, Brooke, I know I've heard a little bit from you of your childhood, but I would love it if you just share a little bit, because, you know, it's rare that somebody feels their calling at such a young age, and just because you've been doing this work since you were just a young woman. So, yeah, would you just share a little bit about your childhood and what brought you into this way of living?
Well, I was raised on a self-sufficient homestead on the back country of the Crow Reservation in Montana. And it was absolutely a wonderful place. I said to my mother once when I was little, I said to her, "Mom, you know, this is heaven." In real heaven, the animals aren't afraid of us.
Yeah.
And so I really had that sense that it was just this radiant, radiant, amazing place. It really touches my heart to think about this. And the thing that was challenging was my family was Native American, and all of the challenges that came to Native American people in that time, including for my family, alcoholism. And so there was a lot of craziness and violence and unhappiness and dysfunction in our system. And I often, just completely turned, I'd get on a little horse and ride up into the, on the deer trails up into the high country and spend my time outside as much as I could. And I just really, at that time, just so much fell in love with the beauty, the exquisite, exquisite beauty. And there were, in that beautiful country, there were pure springs, still are pure springs of water coming out of the ground down from these crystal mountains. That there's a white quartz crystal underneath the mountains that are traditional looking, just pine covered mountains. But there was this incredibly pure water, and there was such beauty, and it really could have remained heaven had it not been for the dysfunction of our family.
Oh, yeah. That's one thing I've always loved about you too, Brooke, is that you're this amazing ceremonialist, this absolutely gorgeous woman, and you're just a cowboy too, You've oftentimes lived on ranches, and you ride horses, and I just love that. It's just that kind of duality there that you embrace. It's so beautiful.
I'm a cowgirl Indian, and what's fascinating to me is one of the things in my traditional name is that my helpers are the sun and the moon. And for me, that's a statement of that. Like, I'm an artist, I'm a business person, I'm a rancher, I'm a Indian, I'm a, so many things. Sides to me. So I get a kick out of that. It's challenging in its own way, but that seems to be a part of my medicine, as it were.
It's powerful medicine, Brooke, really. I know that ceremony, I think one of the things, there's so much about when you stand in circle and you just let the earth speak through you, your way of doing ceremony. I remember one time years ago, our beloved Stephen Buhner, who's one of our elders, has passed away fairly recently, but he used to say, I heard him say this, he'd be talking to me and he said, nobody knows how to hold a circle, like just to hold all of the energy of all those different people in ceremony better than Brooke. It's like when she steps into the circle, it's almost like you see the trees bend over to listen to her, see the flowers listening to her. And of course, all of us in the circle are opening our hearts. So I'm just wondering, how did ceremony, it doesn't sound like your parents really taught you a lot about ceremony. So where did, or maybe they did, but where and when did you first start doing ceremony in your life?
Well, golly, yeah, I didn't have many traditional teachings when I was a child, even though we were half-breed ranchers and thus not so connected to the more traditional people on the reservation. But at the same time, so much of the Native ways were broken. When I was a child, Native ceremony was illegal, federal offense illegal. So we didn't have a lot of it. We had to hide in the backcountry. And we were so far out, we often just had horses to ride and not cars. So we didn't get to many things. So I didn't get very much from my Crow tribe and my elders that would have been there, which was often really sad for me. But what seemed to happen again and again and again in my life, even when I found a teacher, my first teacher was a Cheyenne woman. It seemed that it was like turning me over to the earth, turning me over to spirit was more what happened than turning me over to elders who taught me so specifically about things. So in a way, I feel like I'm like many of us in this culture who have just had to wing it in a way. And so when I went out to study for my PhD in San Francisco in the 70s, it was Carlos Castaneda time and hippie time and all this interest in Native ways and all of that, and an interest in taking care of the earth, I think. And I was as eager a learner as everyone else. I was just so excited about things, and people realizing that I had a Native background turned to me for ceremony, and I'm going, who, me? It's like, It's like, I didn't really, you know, I hadn't been taught that much. But anyway, I just somehow, you know, I think a lot of us who came in this time around, I know you for sure, Rosemary, and a lot of us came in as old souls. You know, we as I was teasing a little earlier, this is not my first rodeo. And I think that for a lot of us on earth, you know, I mean, it's clear that we've been here before and that we're dedicated to taking care of the earth and the land, and that somehow we come in with some support from our past lives. And yeah. I don't know if that's what helped. I just did the best I could do. And I'm a good, sensible person to figure out all of these things. And I'm also a good learner. I really paid attention and learned as much as I could, and just did the best I could. And I feel like what I still do is very simple in a way, but it's just holding that space and realizing that you know, the gestures we make, the prayers we make, especially when we come together in circle, are very, very powerful. So no matter what, you know, just wanting to do that, wanting to offer people the opportunity to do that and to find the incredible power of that is how I've stepped into it. And I feel like I'm still learning for sure.
I know you've always been such a great learner. I know every time you go to conferences and retreats and stuff, and you're a teacher there, but you always go to everybody else's classes. I always thought that was so wonderful. I was too busy visiting, right? And chatting and talking, well, and organizing too. That was part of it. But yeah, that's pretty amazing. I also think, you know, I think one of the things that I do totally agree with you, I think we came in as old souls and we had ancestors that were speaking loudly to us, but also, you know, you just opened your heart to the earth. And I think we also knew how to hear the earth. It was almost like the earth is teaching you, you know, how to step forth and hold energy, you know, because I was mentioning this earlier, but that was definitely one thing that I always saw with you, always, every time I stood in sacred circle with you is, you know, you are just opening yourself to the earth and she pours through you. And then you're like the conduit to bring it out to the world and up into the heavens. So you're like the trees, really, you know, you stand between the earth and the heavens and just channel that. And it actually really moves me to even talk about it because I've seen you do it so much, so often in so many incredible ways. Yeah, it's kind of amazing. So, you know, one of the things that I think that you brought forth into the modern world right now that we live in, and you're one of the teachers for that, is Walking the Beauty Way. And you have incredible songs about the beauty way. And it's been, you know, like even the way you dress and the beads that you do, you know, that fine beading and everything. So would you just share a little bit about walking, you know, what Walking the Beauty Way means? And maybe even if you can, and in words, share what we can do in a simple way to walk the beauty way more every day.
I think the first thing for me is paying attention to the life around us. And I know people live in, you know, don't live in the beauty of nature. But the thing that I think we can look at for inspiration is the absolute beauty of this earth. Yeah. You know, that we just pay attention. It is so exquisite. So, and also my sense is that beauty opens us to spirit. It's like a teacher of mine from the South said one time, in the face of every flower, through the face of every flower, spirit speaks. And that sense of beauty, when we're moved by beauty, I feel like we're moved towards spirit. And so, you know, it's about being moved towards spirit. And it's also about, I have one song that says, we plant flowers as we walk. We're walking this beauty way. And not only are we seeing the flowers and the beauty, but it's our duty to make beauty. And it's not false beauty. You know, it's not adding something or, you know, what we think of as, you know, putting a lot of makeup on. It's really about finding the beauty inside ourselves. And I think as we find a natural pathway, even our own beauty and our own personal beauty can shine forth from that natural, the good, healthy food we eat and being out and exercising and drinking good water and all of that, so that our natural beauty shines. And we're also really supporting the natural beauty of the earth itself. So walking that beauty way is, you know, the Navajo people say, I walk with beauty before me, beauty behind me, beauty on my left and beauty on my right, beauty in my old age, or walk you. And so that thought even is just a powerful one.
That is so beautiful. Yeah, I so agree with you, Brooke. You know, it's like this world is the most exquisitely beautiful place that anyone could ever imagine. And it has everything it needs to make every human being and every animal being and every insect being, every one of us, it provides so much. So it's a wonder that humans have not found a way to be at peace with it. You know, we are so disconnected from our mother, the earth. It's just tragic. And, you know, I agreed when you were first talking about, you know, that if you were a mother and one of your children was so misbehaving that it was destroying the life of the whole family, that you would have to look at a way of, you know, punishing it really. But I also think that we, as mothers, you know, we would always have hope that something would change, right? That is one of our jobs, is to carry that hope that we can really change that child, you know, humanity being the children.
To me, it's not so much about punishment in that sense, but it's really about saying, you know, it's about a learning process. It's like, it's natural consequences. I believe that in rearing children, natural consequences is the way to rear them. If you do something harmful, then what is the consequence of that for you and to help people see what's happening? Because I think a lot of people don't understand, you know, what we're doing. I mean, one of the interesting things when I teach a lot about what white buffalo calf pipe woman shared. And the early part of her story is that two men approached her when she came to the Lakota people. Two men approached her. And one of those men approached her in lust, because she was a beauty. You know, she was a radiant beauty in lust. And, you know, want greed. He wanted something for himself. And she disappeared him, actually. And then another man, a true man, what we consider a true man, who not only had his masculine possibilities, but also the feminine sense of taking care of the people. He works for the people. And so this one stood up and said, "Will you come and teach my people?" Even though he could have been disappearing as well, I guess. But he was the kind of man that took courage and stood up. So when I tell that story, I know that most all of us go, "Well, I'm the good guy," or I'm the woman, so I'm the good person in this story.
Yeah.
I remind people that we're all a little bit of the bad guy, because the United States and many Western countries, you know, we use 60 to 600 times as much. We take from the earth and from life way more than anyone else does. And to me, that's very much what that man was representing. So for us to wake up to what's possible. And, you know, one of the things I've loved, and why I think of myself, in a sense, going back to the Gaian idea, yeah, is I see so much beauty in the way that things are done around the earth. And I'm in Europe right now, and I've always appreciated many things about Europe. But one of them is that they haven't had as many resources as we have had. You know, there are a lot more people and there's not so much. So they have learned to, you know, their appliances that work much better than ours. You know, just simple things like hanging our clothes out, you know.
Yeah.
That's standard. I mean,
yeah,
instead of using electricity, you know, causing us to have to do whatever it is, whether it's now coal being brought back for some bizarre reason, or nuclear power, or whatever it is. You know, if everyone in America just stopped using those big dryers, I think we would see an incredible reduction in what we need and what we're having to do to dam up rivers and get hydroelectric and all of that. So just simple things, but we're so set in our ways. It's like, look, we look down on those primitive folks who hang your clothes out.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, and so great. Place, I had an interesting experience. I mean, I literally could have gone back to South America when I came home. I came home and I had just a few little things to wash out. And I had been in South America, and I've been in Europe, and even in England, where it's like really rainy, they hang, you know, they find a way to dry their clothes.
Yeah.
So I came home and just washed out a few things. And I said to this gal, "I'll just hang them out on the line, you know, just a few little tiny things." And she had this really funny look. And I said, "We don't have a line." And she said, "Oh no, I don't have a line." And I said, "Well," and she still had a funny look on her face. And I said, "What's going on, Susan?" And she said, "It's illegal to have a clothesline in this part of town. And I tell you, I was so sad and so heartbroken. I could have just left and gone back to where they hang their clothes out. So it's that kind of thing. You know, it's very strange where we've gotten to. But, you know, thankfully, I mean, I want to get around to talking about plants, too. I'm so glad that there are people like you. I just admire you so much for and I think maybe like me, it was just kind of a natural expression. You know, you just your family, your grandmother, your people had that sense of using herbs, and it was just obvious and natural to bring them forward. And you had the heart and the wisdom to do that. So, you know, those of us who have had that deeper connection, you know, I think we really need to step up in every way that we can. And certainly herbalists and what herbalists are doing right now, to me, is vitally important, because it's one of the places herbal people and farmers, you know, farmers markets and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's one of the places where I feel like there's just this ding, ding, ding happening in the minds of our modern public, our American public, going, oh, wow. And choosing to do those things rather than supporting, you know, the big pharma that wants to sort of rule the world and give us these strange things that actually many times don't work and often are very, very harmful.
Oh, so harmful. Ecological disaster, actually, is one of the things about modern medicine. Yeah, I'm also hopeful because of the younger generation. There are so many younger generation that are standing up for the earth, you know, and really crying out in outrage. So they give me a lot of hope. You know, they're activists out there, like we were, actually. Like, there's a huge another wave of these young people that are very awake and inspired to make changes. So Sri, I know that you mentioned several different healers, but is there one healer that you can think of that influenced your work a lot, who was a special teacher for you, or a story you have to tell about a teacher?
It's so funny. Actually, I have to say, I have several different stories, maybe, but one of the things I want to say, and I know you're a little bashful, Rosemary, but you've been a really profound influence for me. You know, to see your natural love and expressing that, and the connection with the earth and all that, and the grounded. You know, sometimes I go, I would just like to be an herbalist instead of just talking all the time, you know, or just that kind of thing. You know, to get my hands in the ground is one of the things I would really love so much. And that grounded, you know, hands in the ground, doing it right from scratch is one of my real values. And so you have really been a special teacher for me in that way. And, you know, I have so much worked with herbs as, like, I don't prescribe herbs, or I'm not an herbalist. But one of the things I said, and I have been saying, and interestingly enough, it's kind of come true. I said it laughingly, but I really meant it. Said to people, if and when the earth really, you know, things go to heck, you know, when we maybe don't have as much supply or can't get what we need or whatever, I'm going to kidnap and herbal, because to me, that's, you know, if you have that knowledge of food plants, medicinal plants and all of that, you're just way, way, way ahead in any situation, you know, this situation in this very moment or not. So anyway, what's kind of fun is that I have come here to France and I live with a very, very good friend. And she's an architect, has really gotten very much interested. She's, you know, 60 some years old and wanting to change her life and get away from all of the stuff, you know, the politics of architecture. And she's taking an absolutely amazing herbal course.
Oh, wow.
Here in Montpellier, France, is just stunning. Not only do you study herbs specifically at every possible level, but they taught homeopathy and Ayurveda and ologotherapy and all of these kind of things. So actually, I kind of kidnapped one without even having to work hard at it. And you know, I just really am appreciative of all that. And I got to be around so many wonderful herbalists when I was with you and in your conferences and stuff. So I have many plant friends that I use myself. And I'm getting to learn more on all of our walks. but I wanted to share something kind of funny, because when you would invite me to herbal gatherings, you invited me partly to do ceremony and all of that. But I was still a little bashful and sad that I didn't have something fertile to offer. So my teaching was often cayenne pepper.
I know.
And, you know, I would shock people by telling them all the ways you can use cayenne pepper. You know, you could use it to, and one of the things that I've just been teaching, literally, it's the one thing I often teach people day to day in my life, because I will just ask them, do you have cayenne pepper in your kitchen in case of cuts or bleeding or anything like that? And they look at me funny and I go, no, it is the finest thing I can have on hand to stop bleeding. It stops bleeding, boom, just like that. And it forms an amazing scab, and it also has all of that circulatory bringing wonderful energy, and it's antibacterial and all of that. So when I would talk to people about cayenne, which I think is a much maligned plant, perhaps, you know, and I used to get mad at people because they'd say, I'd say, you know, if you cut yourself, I've cut myself, hit myself with a knife, cut it open, and I just grabbed the cayenne pepper and put it on there. And otherwise, I'd bleed out a lot. And people go, well, doesn't it sting? I just want to pop them. It's like, well, just bleed to death then. It's like, if you don't want a little sting, I guess that's too bad. So anyway, one of the fun things about cayenne, though, is that it's not burning you. It's just stimulating you. And when I told them that I also have used it, diluted beautifully and well, and used appropriately, but I use it in my eyes. I have snorted it up and cleaned my sinuses with it. And so I've done some amazing things and share with people. But one of the things I share with them as well is that if you want to use it, like I often use it at the beginning, if I'm starting to get anything in my sinuses, I dilute some liquid tincture of cayenne and snort that. And the thing I always tell them is that the biggest challenge is if you have the guts to do the second nuts. And the other one is that you're going to do a little dance. There's a specific cayenne dance that comes when you do that. That's one of my great friends is cayenne. And I literally used it in the last little while. I have tore something up the other day and threw that cayenne on them. It's just healing so beautifully. So it's still a great pal of mine.
I love that, Brooke. You've just illustrated so many different things in this little talk that you just gave. Like, one is that an herbalist, you know, you can know just a few herbs. And when you learn them, they like become like really good friends. You can use them for everything. Like you were just saying, it's that plant ally. And then when you were talking about earlier, when you first were mentioning living with this, you're kidnapping your herbal friend, right? It reminded me of something like with my grandmother, you know, in a very serious situation. My grandparents were survivors of the Armenian genocide. And my grandmother was my first herbal teacher. But the reason that they partly why they survived was because my grandmother knew about plants. They were able to find food to eat and also to take care of all the illnesses that happened when they were, you know, running, hiding and marching to their death. So, you know, because my grandparents actually met on the death march. But my grandmother used to tell us when we were children, it was her knowledge of the plants and her faith in God. You know, she had a very strong faith, and she also was knowledgeable about how to use the plants. And that's why they were able to survive when most of their family, you know, they were all scattered, but most of them were actually killed. So yeah, I think it kind of, that's a more sober illustration of that, but it does speak about what you were saying. And then I just want to say, you know, I always invited you to those herbal conferences because I saw you as a plant lover and as an herbalist, because herbalism isn't just about, you know, using plants for medicine. It's using plants, you know, loving plants and using them as a way of life, which you've always done, you know, like you've always embraced plants as a way of life. And so, but I have to be honest, I would always laugh when I would see you put down, you wanted to teach about cayenne, and I'm going, but I want her to do ceremony and sing about the plants. But I would always put it down for you, and they were great classes for certain. Yeah. So, you know, just carrying that a little further, I mean,
you actually kind of shared this already. Like, have you had aha moments with the plants? Like, do you have any story of when the plants, you really felt connected? But I would say probably all of your cayenne stories, you felt pretty aha moments with them, right?
So I have a couple other things that I think are interesting. Like someone told me at one time, I've had a bit of a challenge with my bronchioles. Just seems like the lungs, you know, a little challenging. If I get something in my head, it seems to go down and challenge my bronchioles. And that's always been a real tough thing for me to deal with. But I found out that I found a beautiful mullein. I would pick it in the spring, the little tiny, tiny, exquisite rabbit ear kind of leaves, and always keep it with me. And I have it to this very day right in the next room there. And I've used it in the last month. I would just take one of those little rabbit ear pieces of mullein, light it a fire, and smoke, you know, let that smoke, draw that smoke into my lungs, and boom, you can feel it. I could feel it going to that bronchial, especially the one that's more challenged. I could feel it go. And if I just do that two or three times, boom, it stops that lung challenge. And if I don't stop it, then it goes into something much more heavy. So mullein has been just wonderful. It's just like total magic, like plants are, but it's just the total magic of them. And another story, and it's not exactly herbal, but it's homeopathic. And I think of homeopathic, it's arnica.
Yeah.
And you make it out of plants, as we do so much of our healing. And I had an experience one time. I was on the ranch in Montana, and it was one of those days. One of the things I love to do is on sunny days, I would go out and just hang out with the horses. And it was so sunny this afternoon that all of us were kind of sleepy. And I was just leaning up against a big 16-hand racehorse that we had. They're dead racehorses. And we also had mules. And these silly mules were always doing something. So this one mule walked over where there was kind of a pile of boards and stepped on a board in it and went, oh, and whoa, everybody went right straight in the air. And that big old horse jumped in the air and came down right. His hoof came right down my shin.
Oh, boy.
Oh, yeah.
Painful.
And I remembered arnica. And I made a run for the house, and it was hurting bad. I made a run for the house. I opened that arnica. I jumped the whole bottle. I just got some arnica in my body. I didn't have arnica salve because it was broken a little bit. I wouldn't have used the salve on it anyway. But I put that arnica in. Oh, my God. The pain was gone. The pain was gone, and I kept it up, and it just didn't get to be a problem at all. So it really, really, really made a difference. And it was one of those moments, you know, where you go, this stuff works.
I know, yeah. I know.
So exciting. So arnica is still a good pal of mine, as are many of the homeopathic remedies, which are one of the things I can easily carry.
Days
with the amount of weight you can take, which is very little internationally, that even tincture bottles are hard to carry. So I really work with the homeopathics a lot. And to me, they're one of the real magics of the plant world as well.
They are, yeah. It's the plants kind of branch off into these different systems of healing, you know, homeopathy, the flower essences, you know, herbalism as a physical treatment, herbalism as a shamanic treatment, and even allopathic medicine, right? So much of it was based on, you know, herbal constituents. So they just kind of, you know, we sort of group everything in that herbal healing world. But yeah, do you know about mullein? Like mullein does have a long history of being used for bronchial. And it's kind of an amazing herb because it's an astringent and it's soothing at the same time. But when you were mentioning that, like you've had kind of, you know, mild but kind of chronic issues with your lungs, and the lungs are like the organ that is kind of always related to grief, right? And I think you're not like a grieving person, but, you know, ever since you've been young, you've had this tremendous sensitivity for the pain of the earth, you know, and I just would see that there would always be that, you know, kind of sensitivity that would be resting in your lungs. So it just makes sense to use the herbs to help lift that out. I think that's really beautiful. And, you know, most people don't use it as a smudge, you know, that burning of it for doing that, but that's an old actually, it's an old indigenous treatment is to smoke the herbs and then breathe that smoke up. So yeah, it's really beautiful. You just instinctively knew that, you know, knew how to do that, or somebody had pointed it out to you, but it, you know, you just, yeah. And then I did want to point out too that aha, you know, when you see that herbs really work. And I remember when I first started practicing and people would, you know, this is back in the 1960s, and people would say, well, they're antiquated. You know, this is before herbalism was popular and things, they don't work anymore. And I would just laugh and I would say, you should take a little grain of cayenne and tell me it doesn't work, you know, or Cascara Sagrada, which is a very powerful laxative. Drink a cup of Cascara Sagrada and tell me these plants don't work. But the truth of the matter is they would have been discarded thousands of years ago because, you know, people have passed on the best of what works. And we're even doing that today. So, yeah, those are wonderful stories.
May I say one other thing here?
Oh, please.
One of the genesis of my childhood was that my mom's lineage had been broken. Her mom ended up in a family with smallpox. The whole family except two girls died. They orphaned them off to two white families, and they didn't meet each other until they were 80 years old. Oh. And so what had happened to my mom was that she and so many around a boarding school issue, you know, I don't have to go over that, but all the children were taken to boarding schools, and the whole lineage of spirit and herbalism and all of that was lost. So my mom, out there on that lonesome, far out, no medicine, no doctor, no help kind of place, had she known about herbs, she would have had such a happier and easier life with us children and with everything that went on. And so, you know, I just feel like I want to say to all of you who are interested in herbs, you know, pick up a bit of it and pass it on. You know, a lot of people, I think I remember Stephen, and I didn't realize that Stephen had left us. You mentioned him. You mentioned many other people in all of these ways. Say, you know, it was my grandmother. She used to take me out and show me stuff. It really set deep in them. So for those of you, whether you're your mother, dad, grandma, or grandpa, you know that even just the most simple thing that you think, pick them out and share something beautiful on the land. And I was listening to I was reading something. I was in a beautiful botanical garden, a Mediterranean garden over on the Azure coast of France. And one of the botanists there, they had two or three or four just saying what their experience was. And this one man said, take your children out and let them be connected with the earth and play and enjoy and the water and the plants and the forests. And he said, when that happens, they will form this loving attachment to the earth. And it doesn't matter if they go on and become a businessman or what they might do, but they will always remember their love for the earth and be the kind of people who are earth keepers at one level or the other. They will support the earth. So I think that kind of thing is so important. It doesn't matter whether everyone becomes an herbalist, but any kind of thing you can share with children about the natural world and the plants and the big magic of it all.
Yeah.
I mean, that's so exciting because we need that deep love. It's, you know, it's so good to establish it on our children, because kind of trying to figure it out when you're older is a whole different and less hurtful kind of way of approaching it.
I think it's one of the most important things we can do is share with the children. And, you know, when you don't have that connection, you have a deep loneliness in your soul. You know, you have a deep loneliness for that your whole life, you know. And I think that's why when we see adults that would come to those herb conferences or join us in the class, they would just, it would be almost like a homecoming for them. You know, they would be so turned on by this simple, it was just simple things. Here's a few plants and here's how you make medicine. But it was like, it just connected them to something so deep in themselves. So, yeah, I so agree with you, sweetie. Share with the children.
Just in general, when people don't have earth skills of any kind, and I don't mean anything fancy. I mean, I always tried to have people make something, do a project of some kind with their hands in the
lamps.
And so a lot of times we'd need to sew a little something. And there were a lot of, there was mostly women. There were a lot of women who had never, ever picked up a sewing needle.
Yeah.
Didn't know how to do anything. And what, it was sad to me because I thought there must be some part of their body that is nervous about should anything happen, should, you know, should they need to be able to do anything? They don't know how to do anything.
If I can.
And so, like, I love to learn to make fire or to, you know, to learn a few herbal things or to do all of that. And one of the reasons that I want to say to you, all of you, very clearly is that my experience is that when we don't know how to do anything like that, and also when we don't have community, which is another wonderful thing, to build community, we know we're lost. We know that we don't have any backup. We know that if something goes wrong, there's nothing and no one, and we're just lost. And for me, that creates greed. The way we solve that, we try to solve it, but it doesn't actually work because money won't buy anything if we have real crisis. The way we try to solve it is we try to save money or get stuff or get things, you know, build a fortress around us of those things. And that's a pretty empty fortress if we don't have knowledge of the natural world and a community in which to be able to rest.
This is such wise words, Brooke, on so many levels. Yeah, a beautiful, incredible message. It's so inspiring to hear you carrying this message on you ever since I've known you, which has been over 40 years. That first time I heard you sing at that medicine wheel gathering, you have been such a strong advocate, you know, and you, and I can tell, I haven't spoken to you for quite a long time, and I can tell you are still out there strongly doing the work. It's so beautiful. You know, I had a couple more questions, and then I did want to ask you, you know, and definitely wanted you to spend some time sharing with our listeners, you know, what you are doing right now, but it's a, such a sensitive subject, and I felt like you would be such an important person to ask because you are a bridge worker. You know, you do have Indigenous, we all have Indigenous backgrounds, but you have a direct lineage with our Native heritage, with your Native heritage, and yet you also have walked freely in the world and shared with everybody, which is not always greeted with, you know, it's been... it's become an issue, you know, and it's sad to me because so many of our teachers were elder Indigenous people from different parts of the world who wanted these teachings to be carried on. And of course, they wanted them to be carried on respectfully. But I just wonder if you can share a little bit about, you know, your view of cultural appropriation, you know, and how we can be really sensitive in cultural appreciation where we are passing down the teachings of the earth.
Well, I love that cultural appreciation kind of thing and the thought of the elders and others who really wanted to share the knowledge, who really knew that it was important for everyone. And, the, you know, the challenge we have had is that in the old days, let's say we were in a village and someone popped up and said, well, I can do this ceremony. I haven't studied it, but I can do it. And boom, the elders would have been on them and said, uh-oh, come on. You need to slow down and let me show you. And, you know, are you really meant for this and blah, blah, blah. And so there was a kind of, you know, taking care of things in that way. But now it's, you know, we've lost our elders. We're connected to everything. We, you know, pick up this and that, but, you know, we, it's so easy to not go deep into things.
Yeah.
But one of the things, you know, I want to say is that there are so many things that I feel are sort of claimed by some Native people that are just human things. For instance, let's talk about Purification Lodge. A lot of you have probably done Sweat Lodge, you know, and put some beautiful willow and cover it and put some hot stones and pour water on it. Well, there are some Native tribes who say that belongs to us. In fact, it's been done around the whole world. I have Scott ancestors who do what's called a clogon, exactly the same thing. I have a teeny bit of Danish, interestingly enough, and my Scandinavian and Danish ancestors have a permanent sweat lodge called a sauna. And it's always been where prayers and things were done. And all over the world, there have been sweat lodges. So what's important, I think, is that we can do those things because they're natural to us as a human family. If you've ever been in a sweat lodge, you know, it doesn't matter whether you walk, you know, get out in the mud when you crawl out, you're internally clean. You have prayed, yep. You have cleansed your pores, you are so clean. And so it's a natural thing. But the thing that gets us in trouble and where I think we need to get clear about our lines and boundaries is that if you're doing, saying, oh, I'll do a west-facing Lakota healing lodge, and you don't know anything about it, you might have seen one, you don't know anything, you haven't been trained, that really does belong to those people. They have developed that, that's theirs. And so to claim that you can do that without training and without honoring and respecting that is not right, is not right in any way. And certainly even to use sweat lodge and not know what you're doing is not okay. You know, we know instances where people have been harmed and even died in some of those kind of situations where people didn't know what they were doing. So it's so important that you learn and ground yourself in whatever you're wanting to do, and also not claim unless you are working with someone who can teach you a very specific way of a very specific people, then it's really important that you, you know, that you don't do those things. But I was with one time, I was with a beautiful elder of the Lakota tradition, and there's been a lot of issue about whether you can do the, you know, carry a sacred pipe, a chalupa. And I asked her about that, and she said, she was so wonderful. She was this fierce, little, tiny, beautiful, amazing traditional woman. And she said, everyone should carry the pipe and pray with it in the right way. She said, we need all the prayers we can get. And if people are carrying it in a good way and have learned about it, everyone should be praying. And praying with the pipe is a powerful way. You know, you need to learn what you're doing and respect and honor it. You know, it's not a game. It's not something to play with. There's enormous power there. So I don't know. I just feel like in so many ways, you know, even people claiming they own the drum and should be able to say what happens with drums. I mean, that is so ignorant and lacking in understanding. Drums have been around forever and ever. One of the hand drums, the small hand drums, you know, you can see things back in the Greek and on, as long as we can see symbols, there have been people using the drum and women using that hand drum. And in some of the traditions I've studied, the women had those smaller drums, which represent the circle, the feminine, the womb, the earth. And they then allowed or gave the bigger drums to the men to help them come into rhythm and to bring their energy up from their sexual chakras up to their heart by calling the people and joining the people together around those big drums. So on the other side of it, I can really understand how our native people, it's like, hey, you've taken everything else, everything. You've taken our land, you've taken our, you took our children away from us, you have taken our wealth, you've taken our herbal knowledge, you've taken everything. And now you're taking what? It's like, so I really understand that. I understand that emotion. And yet I think it's so important to, for me, I pay more attention to those heartful and wise people who they may have that feeling in a way, but they also know that these things are important for the larger world to learn. You know, the more we learn about all our relations, the more we learn about the teachings of the earth peoples, the primary peoples, the more likely we're going to stay here, not only us out in a more modern world and off the reservations now, all of the many colored people, but also the people on reservations, the more traditional native people. Because if we mess this world up, it's messed up for everybody. Nobody gets to go free. So, you know, we're that's part of the lesson is that we are one family, like it or not. We are one big family. And the more we, the more the modern world, you know, changes things and moves things around and you know, every disease, every weed, you know, if you want to call them weeds, anything, you know, they become weeds when they're in a place they don't have natural predators, perhaps. But, you know, all of that kind of thing, we're just all one big group here. And we're all as some of the old teachers used to say, we're all walking each other home, and we need to do it in the best way we can. So I just say to people, be respectful, be honoring, go deep into what you're doing, find out, find a way to learn, and then understand that when you're coming from your heart and when you're doing it in a good way to help people, hopefully that, you know, that will be smiled on in a good way, even though there are people out there that are angry and will challenge that in some ways. Does that help?
Oh, Brooke, that is so wise. Those words are so incredibly wise and so well spoken. You know, and I just want to echo what you were just saying, is that there was a beautiful elder teacher from Hawaii, Raylene Lancaster. She has this gorgeous Hawaiian name. I just can never say it, so I just call her by her English name, Raylene Lancaster. She died. You may have met her. She was one of the more powerful, eloquent speakers at the International, and she mostly just would come and chant and sing for us. You know, she was just an incredible human being, a bowl of light, right? And I went over, I led a few trips over to Hawaii with my plant lover's journeys, right? And to study with her, with other Hawaiian elders. And, you know, the first few times I went, I could really feel like the earth and the communities there and how the native communities, the Hawaiians, there was, you know, beneath all the tourism was this spirit of unrest, you know, and it was building on the volcano, but it was coming from the people. And I asked Raylene about it, you know, knowing that the United States government had gone and, you know, militarily overtaken Hawaii and, you know, and just claimed a sovereign country. And so there's this teeming resentment there. And Raylene said to me, she goes, well, the young people are very angry about it. You know, she's talking about a certain group of young people. She said, and they have a right to be, you know, it's understandable. Just like you're saying, it's very understandable why they are. She said, but then she goes, but they just haven't learned yet that we are all one people, you know? So, you know, that we are all one, we're all here to learn together and to share together. So that was, you know, she just looked at, said the very, kind of the very same thing that you did, is that it's understandable, the anger, but as we walk the medicine way, we realize these are teachings of the earth and they're what bring us in balance, and that they're here to share with everyone, because she freely would share those, you know, those traditional ceremonies with us as a teaching for that we would receive the gifts from that land. Yeah, very well spoken, sweetie. You know, we're almost coming to the end of our time, and I want to just a couple more things. I just wanted to ask you if there is, you know, for all the things that you've done, and we've only touched on a few. I mean, really, literally, I know that you have touched thousands of people with your teachings. Is there anything that you've done that you're most proud of, that you look back and just feel really good about? Or I should say really, really, really good about, because I'm sure you feel good about it all.
You know, one of the things that I feel good about is actually, for myself personally, that I have stayed healthy. I know one Wallace Black Elk said to some people, he said, you know, the one who's going to hang around is Brooke. She's taking care of herself and she will be here a long, long, long time. And so, you know, having learned, and really everyone says, oh, it must be natural to you. But I work really hard at that. And, you know, doing natural kind of things is really, really helpful. But I think in some ways the wilderness camps that I have done and I continue doing, I have things scheduled now in Colorado and here in France, where we can take people out on the land. Because as I was saying, it just, you know, teaching people about the earth in some room in a hotel in, you know, in a big city is the worst. I mean, I'm proud of myself for having done that and tried it and carried the message there. But the things that not that I'm so proud of, but that I'm the most joyous about. Yeah. And the most excited about when I want to energize myself, I think about that kind of thing more than anything else that I've done. So kind of hanging in there over this long term, you know, and continuing to offer those things, you know, I guess that's what I'm the most proud of, is just coming from, in a sense, not knowing so much, not being really traditional. And I have, of course, maintained all my life that I'm not a real traditional teacher, but just carrying my love for the earth and sharing that with people, I think, and hoping that they can find that inside themselves. I'm really proud of that, for sure.
I I'm so proud of that too, Brooke. As I said, like through everything, through all the changes in your life and the many times you've moved, you've just always, always carried that spark outward to people. It's definitely something that you should be excited and joyous for. And you do radiate well-being. I mean, I met you. I haven't seen you in a while. You know, when you showed up on Zoom, I had to laugh because, you know, I met you as a young woman. We were both like, you know, it was in the early 1980s when I first met you at that, or maybe the end of the 1970s. It was a long time ago. And yet you still have exactly the same radiance. I don't think you've changed much at all. It's remarkable, actually. And I do know that it's not just genes. Part of it, we always give thanks to the good genes that early development, but also I do know that you walk your talk. You know, that's one thing. You definitely are a woman who walks her medicine talk and have done that every step of the way. So do you want to share just a little bit? You're doing so many exciting things. I'm going to join you either in France or here back in the States when you come, and also let people know, we'll have your website listed on our website as well, but will you just share a little bit about what you're doing and where people can find you on the web?
Yeah, you know, it's basically just medicineeagle.com, and you can sign up on the mailing list there. And I don't send out very much. Probably I'm not a very good media person, but anyway, I'd love to have you there. But the things I'm here in Europe right now and teaching, especially right now in France, and I will expand that a bit more. But one of the things I'm really excited about is I'm doing a vision quest here in France, and it turns out that on our family farm, the family that I'm with here, have a farm up in the Highlands, and there is a mesa there that is stunning.
I saw that.
I have a picture of it on my Facebook. And so those vultures fly over that thing, and it's just amazing. So I'm wanting to take people up this summer to be there. And then also I'm coming back to the States, and I'm very much in love with Southwestern Colorado around the Four Corners area, and inviting people to come on what I call Cathedrals in the Pines, which is to just experience the beauty of the ruins there and the gorgeous golden leaves and being able to sit out. We don't usually have time to do like a formal vision quest, but I always call it visioning time, where, you know, most of us, if we just sit a long day or overnight into the next day, that's a beautiful time for us. So anyway, you can see on my website about that. And then I have a couple other things that I'd love to share with people. One of them is you can subscribe to my We Are Earth Keepers program. It's a continuing monthly program. I do a little setup teaching, and then we do a ceremony for the earth every month. And I really would love to have you join me on that.
I'm going to join.
The better, you know, the more powerful we can be. So We Are Earth Keepers. You'll see that on my site. And then another thing I have, and I've focused it mainly on women, because I've felt the need to support women's energy and the feminine in this awakening time of the feminine. It's called the Power and Beauty Wisdom Series. And in that, I talk about women's mysteries and teachings, which I think men need to learn as well. I talk about the ancient brain, that just how this system works that we can empower ourselves with. And also a section called Love is the Answer, about the Dawn Star teachings about love as the answer to what we need on earth. To me, it's the basic message, that sense of love, the Dawn Star's teachings, and the connectedness of the feminine through Buffalo Woman. So those things are there, and you can connect up on the site, and I've got lots of little teachings and all sorts of things that I'd love to share with you. So it'd be great to be in touch with all of you. I hope to see some of you when I'm back in the States again.
Awesome, Brooke, really. I have to say that just sharing with you, my heart is just so wide open. Just, you know, again, it's that energy. I'm so moved by your words. Would you mind just singing one chant, just one of your songs to close with? I hate to ask you because I know you're very busy, but I just need to hear it.
I enjoy this. I love you so much, Rosemary. And it's always so fun for me to hang out with you. And I'm going to talk you into coming to France too. So I'm glad. Walk in beauty, it's all around you. Walk in beauty, let love surround you. Walk in beauty, Make it around you. Walk in beauty with love for all. Hey, 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 hey. Walk in beauty. It's all around you. Walk earth with honor. Shine love upon her. Walk in beauty, sweet earth, we honor. Walk with honor and love for all. Hey, yeah. Hey, yeah. Hey, 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 hey. May you all walk in beauty.
Thank you so much.
I am thankful.